Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hello and welcome to episode 106 of Slam Fire Radio for May 8th, 2015. I'm one of your hosts, Trevor Furlott.
And I'm another one of your hosts, Matthew McClatchy.
And I'm some guy from the internet.
Hey, guy from the internet, you don't sound like Owen at all.
Tom, no, I don't.
Tom, it's your line, Tom.
I'm Tom Nelson of the Gunny. I'm sorry, I just had like this crazy thunderstorms going on outside.
Yeah, we can hear something in the background. That is actually kind of scary. You haven't been hit with any tornadoes, have you? Oklahoma got hit this week.
No tornadoes. We just get crazy wind.
It's just me and Matt Thompson's walking up the stairs.
Watch your calf.
Oh no, the call's coming from inside the house.
So as you may have surmised, our good friend Tom of Para, Practical Arm Response Academy, and the Gun Dudes is joining us once again on Slam Fire Radio. Welcome, Tom. Welcome back.
I'm happy to be back. It feels the best being here on Slam Fire.
Imagine that. You're podcasting again. So let's go there. What the heck?
Oh, well, Carl's been super busy. I've been super busy. Stan's been, but anyways, long story short, there are going to be a few episodes.
Did you say Stan's dead?
Stan might be dead.
Stan might. You never know. So those old folks just die off, like randomly sometimes.
I think Matthew, he just doesn't want to admit they finally put him into a home.
Right.
So we're actually gonna get a couple weeks of episodes going. So we're gonna try to get three in a row here, like normal. So Saturday you will get an episode. Well, awesome. Sunday night. Well, it will be recorded on Saturday.
Will it be you and Koski in the back of a car again?
No, it'll be Carl. Carl will actually be on the episode.
Oh, excellent. So what's the deal, Carl? Carl changed jobs?
Well, yeah, he went into driving the tractor trailers for UPS, and so that's a pretty desirable position, but it's a two-week training program, and then he did some stuff prior to that, and then after he passed, so he just wanted to make sure he got all his ducks in a row.
Right. So, now, tell me, do those tractor trailers, do they come with a drop-down rope ladder?
No. He's got a handicap elevator. He just sits on it, he presses the button, and it brings him up.
Oh, nice. So. And one final thing. This isn't the gun, dude. Stop clicking your gun. Audio quality means something over here.
I'm not clicking any guns.
Uh-oh.
It's not me either. So, Trevor, that leaves you.
No.
I'm playing with a flashlight, a silence flashlight. So
are we allowed to have silence flashlights in Canada?
I just mean it doesn't make noise.
Oh, I thought you meant like you put masking tape over the lens or something.
Got a bezel. It's a really long bezel.
I don't know what that is. Somebody going to tell me what a bezel is, or are we going to move on?
No, we'll just move on probably.
Okay, great. Yeah, so let's move into what we did this week in guns. And Tom, since you're the guest, why don't you regale us with tales of Utah gunfire.
Utah gunfire this week. So nothing on Saturday because I had to redo my sprinklers. So that was fun. But I got to load some ammunition. I also got to do a bunch of dry fire. I'm trying to get ready for the Utah State IDPA Championship, which will be, I think, in 2 weeks. So just making sure all the ducks are in a row, and took a look at the stage designs and kind of decided on the stuff I need to practice. And it looks like whoever can shoot one-handed the best is going to win that match. So I think there's like three or four out of the 12 stages, like three or four one-handed shooting stages.
Wow.
I know we go back and forth. We as in action shooters go back and forth between rules in IDPA and rules in IPSC. But IPSC came up with something this year that says that you cannot make more than 25%, I believe is the number of the stages, any one thing. So you can't have more than 25% unloaded starts. You can't have more than 25% strong hand, or 25% weak hand, or 25% prone. So
So does that mean you can't, what if you wanted to have an entire like match where everything was just shot standing from the holster, gun loaded and ready to go, two hands? Like, is that not allowed too? Does that mean you have to put in certain things?
Yeah, that's a good point, Matthew. I think that one's just the default start position, so it wouldn't apply to that one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It doesn't apply to the easy stuff.
Yeah, that's
just
the hard stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that's the one that everyone can do, so I guess they leave that one alone.
I guess.
So, but like in SummerSlam this year, there's only one weekend. There's only one prone. There's only one table start, you know.
Interesting.
I mean, I don't like going to a match and seeing a bunch of stuff over and over. I remember one year at SummerSlam, you were forever chasing your magazines. There's mags on this table. There's mags on this table. Why?
Yeah, I just want my mags in my belt where they belong.
Or in one location.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway.
Yeah, I remember that when somebody actually ended up shooting one of their mags.
Yep. Yeah,
because of the location. That, yeah. Yeah, the mag got took around.
Yeah, you had to play fetch your mags throughout the maze. So you couldn't reload off your belt throughout the maze. The mags were staged all throughout the maze. And in one of her first shooting positions, she launched a few rounds downrange and put one into her magazine. So when she got there, it was gone. They found it afterwards on the ground with a round embedded into it.
Good times.
Yeah. Carry on, Tom.
Yeah, so that was pretty much it. I've been doing about an hour dry fire a night, so... Really just trying to be smooth and do stuff. It's I got a bunch of these cardboard practice targets, IDPA targets, and I got a bunch of these mini poppers. And so I've been trying to set it up as best as possible to kind of work through it. So, but yeah, the one-handed shooting stuff, that's going to be a serious... There's one stage where you have to keep your arm in a sling and shoot one-handed. There's another stage where you have to shoot from the left side of cover with your right hand, single hand only, and then shoot from the left side of cover. Excuse me, shoot from the right side of cover with your left hand. So you're kind of awkward there. And then you got to like pick up a gun off the table, knock down a popper, shoot two activated targets, and follow up with two headshots on two. It's just a mess this year. So it's going to be a lot of short stages. So if you screw any one of those up, it's going to be hard to make up the time.
How big is this event going to be is in terms of round count, stages, and participants?
I think as far as the round count, it's going to be like 150. So that's a pretty decent size IDPA match. I think there's 12 stages. It's a tier 3 match. And then as far as participants, I think we're close to 100. I'd have to look. I signed myself up a few months ago and just kind of left it alone.
Right. I expected a state match in a state like Utah that it would have been double all those numbers.
Well, you... To put on a two-day match is a whole lot more effort for the guys out here to do, and we basically like to just shoot on Saturday. So, but if you did like something like otherwise like in other parts of the country, like regional matches and stuff like that, you'll get two-day matches.
Yeah.
So if we had enough, we might have been able to break it up into 2 days and have two different sets of shooters. You know, a Saturday morning and a Sunday afternoon, or you know, vice versa.
Cool. How about you, McClassy? What have you been up to?
Not too much. Just more of the same, really. Gravel pit shenanigans with the 22 and whatnot. Out and about on the four-wheeler quite a bit. Saw three grouse and a hare. So the wild animals are still sort of in the area, despite my best efforts.
How many partridge and rabbits?
No partridge and no rabbits. All grouse and hare. Now, the hare was still white.
Uh-oh.
And the snow has melted, and so he is still standing out like a sore thumb. But he's got all summer to change back to brown, just in time to turn white again before the snow comes, so I can get him. But yeah, no, not hunting season at all, so I can't shoot them, of course. But it was nice to see them anyway. And the grouse were just like, why can't I see grouse like this when I'm out hunting? They were just standing in the middle of the trail. Like, I walked up to one, I could have kicked it like a football if I wanted to. It was just sitting there looking at me like, hey, what are you doing?
It's almost like they know, huh?
Yeah, it's like, you don't have a gun. Well, actually, I did have a gun, but you can't shoot me. Nah, 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 nah. Yeah.
I think a male will have something to do with love is in the air.
Maybe. Yes, it is definitely grouse mating season. You hear them all over the place out there right now, which is kind of cool. So, other than that, I went over to a friend's house. He's got a bunch of boys, and he recently bought them a pellet gun. And... So we sighted that in. It has a scope on it, so I was kind of showing them the ins and outs of how to sight in sight in a rifle properly with the scope. And the very first thing we learned was we tighten all the screws when you mount the scope.
Yes.
We can't get it to zero. Well, the scope is rattling. That's gonna, it's gonna be part of it. But it was a really cool gun. Really cool scope. Worked really well once we got it dialed in. It worked very nicely, very accurate. They were shooting some German pellets of some sort. And very accurate. A lot of fun. They're going to have a lot of fun with it. So
make sure that you don't edit the show incorrectly and cut out the word pellet in that sentence.
Right. Why?
Because you said they were shooting some German pellets.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So no, I won't.
I'm in enough trouble.
Yes, you are. And had we just smoothed right on or sailed right on by that smoothly, no one would ever have picked up on that except you and Edith, of course, and maybe Styx, who's still probably going to beat you, which will be hilarious.
Okay. Yes, I'm sure it will be for everyone else.
Yeah. So anyway, that's pretty much all I did. So Trevor, why don't you regale us with your list and a half here?
Yeah, it's another long, you know. Now the snow is off the range. I mean, it's every day something gun-related is going on. I went to the range last weekend with Filthy, my godson, and his girlfriend. We shot my Steyr Filthy's Glock with and without the 22 conversion kit. And then we tested out our newly built NEA 39s. So some of the highlights of this were my godson, Marcel, is in the military, and he's dating a young lady who is pro-gun, doesn't have anything. They both have their non-restricted. They're definitely going to get their PALs. They're our PALs, especially since I told Marcel I would buy him a gun, a handgun, as soon as he got it. So if that's not motivation to finally get your license, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I think I'll finally get mine, just so you buy me one. I'll get it again, so you buy me one.
We were shooting close because I thought they would need that. So we were also restricted to where we could stand on the range based on whether or not you were going to sink in the mud. As it was, the range was still very, very mucky.
Yeah.
Nice little range that Filthy has there. And so anyway, she kicked our butts, is what I'm trying to get around to saying here. We just shot nice, controlled, slow fire for groups. And well, we started off with the drill, and then Marcel was barely getting them on the paper. And I was, all right, stop. So we stopped everything, did an exemplar with them. And then it's just, you know, he's got to just work to get rid of the flinchiness and pushing them left, right? But she get up there, and in true typical female student fashion, she listened to the instructions. She needed almost no instruction, to be perfectly honest. Was very slow, very methodical, and her final group was so tight that I said, Filthy, we can't leave until I shoot a group better than that. And unfortunately, I was not able to. It was amazing. So like, she could put 10 bullets in the same hole. I know it's only 5 yards, but she's like a little 21 or 22 year old tiny little thing who doesn't own a handgun, and so it's not right.
But she is she from gun. Like Russia? Is she like a mail order assassin? Is that what's going on?
I bet you that's what it. I'm gonna find my godson dead, and it'll all turn out to be that.
She's just like the slightest hint of an accent.
Yeah, but it's on the French side, and we know.
Oh,
it's one of those French Russians. You gotta watch out for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then the Steyr was malfunctioning all over the place. When you and I had it out, I mean, except for when Matt broke my Striker, the gun ran great.
Yep.
How did you break the Striker anyway?
The other Matt, but just shooting it. It was going to, whoever happened to be holding it and pulled the trigger that time, it was going to break. He didn't, you know, it wasn't anything he did wrong. He just.
It's funnier my way, though.
It is, certainly is, yes. Yeah.
No, the Striker just broke, Tom. I mean, the gun looks unused, but I don't know exactly how many rounds are through it. And just, just poor metallurgy, I guess. Air pocket in there or something, and the Striker broke. So Steyr was nice enough to get one sent out, like, right away. And so I emailed them again and said, all right, so I got the Striker and the gun. I took it to the range, and now it won't extract worth a darn. I understand that you guys have identified this as a problem with some of your early generation pistols, and you have a upgraded Striker for them. And he's like, yes, absolutely. I'll get one out to you right away. Not a problem. We're sorry. Like,
cool.
Just, yeah, super awesome about it. So, so hopefully I'll finally get that blessed pistol up and running. The NEA 39s, that's the any air upper chambered in 7.62 by 39. So Filthy got in three of those from NEA, one for me, one for him, and one for Muffin. They came with a mag, which is cool as well. I wasn't expecting that. Really nice. The fit and finish is nice. You know how NEA firearms are pretty much gray, Matthew, when you compare them to...
Yep.
Yeah, not this. They're finally making them in black.
Cool. Well, that's good.
Yep. Well, we were able to find some Bonnells, I think it's pronounced. Non-corrosive steel case, 7.62 at Canadian Tire. $9.99 a box, so it's the same price as buying a box of Winchester white box.
Right, yep.
223. And it, yeah, non-corrosive, ran it through the gun and walked away and came back and it's not rusted. So
cool.
That being said, NEA, well, the president anyway of NEA, has told me that you can shoot corrosive through the gun and it will not rust. All the parts are coated with a special arc treatment, whatever that means, that will prevent them from rusting when shot with corrosive. The barrel included, the gas system, the gas tube is stainless, so he said you can shoot corrosive through it and they won't rust. I'm not going to test that.
No.
But anyway, it's nice to have it told to you by the president. So that's,
yep.
If it does rust, I can say, hey, remember that time you told me they don't rust?
Surprise!
So, yeah. And then we went over to, turns out, you know, Mark, Justice's dad.
Yeah.
He lives within a stone's throw, I guess, of the Fredericton gun shop. And we were over there, and I had a picture of me taken with a Thompson submachine gun from World War II. This was the military version one, full auto, select fire, whole nine yards.
And, M1A1?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. Which the one that only takes the stick mags, right, with the charging handle on the side, on the bolt?
Yep, that's the one. Yeah, what a gun. The stuff in there, Matthew, like when we showed up, Derek works there. Derek is the guy who is the curator over at the Machine Gun Museum.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as we came through the door, he pulled us into the back. The owner's like, what are you doing? He's like, don't worry, Trevor's a gun nut. He'll love this. So he brought me in the back, and there was some really neat stuff back there. And one of the coolest things back there was a broom handle Mauser that was complete. And when I say complete, I mean it had the wooden holster slash buttstock.
Yeah.
But it also had all of the leather hardware that is attached to that wooden buttstock.
Oh, that's cool.
Thing that holds all the little mag loader or clip loader or an extra clip or something, plus the part that needs to go onto your belt. So it was something. And then, of course, we went back to Filthy's for some Filthy burgers and then went to the Machine Gun Museum. And we didn't tell my godson and his girlfriend where we were bringing them or what we were doing, and they were starting to get a little sketched out by it. So what we did was we got Derek in on the joke. So we called him Mr. Gray, and we basically treated him like he was a gangster and needed to be treated with respect. Can I get him another drink, sir? Filthy, did you chili salad fork? Oh, my God, no, I didn't. I'm sorry. Don't apologize to me. Apologize to him. And so they were like, and he was just almost not saying anything.
Yeah.
So they were like, who the hell is this guy, and why is my uncle kissing his ass? Like, what's going on? So, yeah, then we got to the museum, and you should have seen their faces. It was awesome. That was Friday. Saturday, we went over to Filthy's Buddies to throw my Garand together. Got that together. It was awesome. So big shout out to Chris for helping with that. Well, helping. I watched while he did everything. And to Filthy for fronting me a stock. So got that at home. We'll talk about that a little bit here in a second. Then I met with Luke at the archery club. Luke bought a new bow, so I was over there checking out how his shooting form and technique and whatnot's going. And then on Monday, my Smith & Wesson Model 29-2 arrived, and now I'm happy. Now I couldn't be happier. I mean, it literally is new in box condition. Fit and finish is way better than the other 29 was. I don't know, you can't recreate these things. The lines are perfect. The grip is perfect. I brought it out to the range and I put 50 rounds through it. Absolutely loved it. The boys were very disappointed with me because not only were they not allowed to shoot it, they weren't allowed to touch it, and they weren't allowed to come within 3 feet of it. It was very simple. If they were to touch it and drop it accidentally or whatnot, somebody's going to the hospital and somebody's going to jail. So,
right, yeah.
I think it's better if everybody just accepts the fact that they cannot touch it.
It's a Smith, dude. The thing's going to run forever. You can do anything to it. In fact, I would just drag it behind the car.
Yeah, you can. You do that to yours.
Reliability testing. That's what I would call it.
That's what you should do, Trev, really. You got to throw it in some sand, throw it in some mud.
Yeah, listen, it's not even funny. I got a little too excited while emptying the cylinder once, and I didn't open the cylinder all the way, and a piece of brass came out and put the slightest little nick in the grip, and I almost went nuclear. So, I wanted this gun, but I also want a 44 I can shoot, and this isn't it. If I take this out to the range often and let people try, oh, sure, I got a 44 Magnum. Yeah, you can try it. No. Because I'm not dragging it back and forth to the range and letting people put their muddy little mitts all over it to get it scratched or dinged or run that risk, right? This gun I've always wanted, and I finally have it, and it's pristine, and I want to keep it pristine. It's not my 590A1 world, and you've seen me, Matthew. I just throw it on the concrete, like, whatever. It's just, that's a tool. This is not a tool. So.
Well, it is a tool. It's just you're also a tool.
You can listen. You can call me anything you want. You're not touching it.
I don't want to touch it. It's fine.
Good.
I got 222s. That's all I need. 222s makes a 44. So booyah.
Right. Then I got the Garand out, and it hit paper like right away without just the way the sights came out of the box. It was awesome. But unfortunately, it won't cycle. So we went.
You got one of those single shot Garands.
I do, yeah. Went through quite a bit of testing, looking at the ammunition recipe that I used. I even got some. I have some Remington Core Lock on hand, 150 grain for my hunting 30-06 rifle.
Yep.
And I was told, yeah, you can put a couple of those through it, and it won't bend your op rod. To stay away from 180 grain factory ammo, stuff like that. That stuff will bend your op rod. So anyway, tried. Numerous things, and then finally Pierre-Luc came over with a set of micrometers, and we got the numbers from Chris, the guy who built them, or who built my Garand, to find out what the tolerances should be, and the op rod piston is out of spec. So I'm going back to Fredericton on Saturday to return the gun to him, and he's going to replace the piston, free charge, all that good stuff. He knows how bad I want to have this thing ready for the charity shoot. So, mm-hmm. So Saturday I'm going to go back to Fredericton. I'm just going literally straight to the Machine Gun Museum, where I'm going to meet Filthy, give him the gun, and we were able to invite Justice and his dad Mark.
Cool.
To come along and tour the museum. I didn't realize they were in Fredericton. I figured they were out closer to Owen, since him and Owen know each other from LARPing stuff.
Yep.
And and I also got out this week and shot my 686. So I got my wheel gun fix in for the year.
I guess so.
Yeah. So.
And I'm going to get my wheel gun fix in through you. So
yes.
Now that you've shot your wheel guns, I'm now
you're
done.
Good.
I
think I'm also going to hop on that bus.
Yeah.
With the wheel guns. I think Trevor's done enough for all of us.
I think that's really the way it should be, really. One guy does the wheel gun shooting and the rest just benefit from it.
Hey, I'm okay with that. So it's all right then if I buy a 629 and a Ruger GP100.
Absolutely. Yeah. While you're at it, get a Ruger SP101.
I don't think I can I?
Why not?
Is it a barrel thing?
I think you can get them in the right barrel length. I think you can get them in Canada.
Because the GP100, they're making that the 4.2, right?
Right.
So, all right. Well, that's enough of that craziness. Let's get on to upcoming events. The 5th annual charity shoot, which Tommy is missing by one day.
Good job, Tommy. Good job.
Way to book flights, Tom. Way to book flights.
Wait, no one's going to be there to pick me up. What was I supposed to do? Get to Canada and just sit there?
You could. Yeah. I mean, that's an option. I mean, while you're in Canada, be polite, too. Would you, while you're at it?
I'm just going to start hitchhiking.
You can do that safely on this side of the border.
Down the road. That's where I'll always be. So that's June 27th. All proceeds going towards the Dalhousie Nursing Home Foundation. Cost for the event is $25. Gets you a silhouette match, around a silhouette, around a trap, and rifle shooting in a Ipsic style mini match.
Yeah. Bring some. Are we going to have a barbecue there?
Undetermined.
Okay. So possibly bring some extra cash for a barbecue. If not, if you don't hear again us talking about this, just bring food.
And bring the leftovers are showing up at Trevor's house, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Good. Good.
We'll take you over for some more poutine, Tom. You seem to enjoy that last time.
Oh, please. Please do that.
Tom's truly an American. He does not like poutine.
Hey, Shaw ate his poutine.
Shaw hated his?
ate his.
Yeah, ate his. Yeah.
Yeah. So
good for Shaw.
Yeah, we're basically saying Shaw is better than you, is what we're saying.
Well, you just said all Americans don't like Putin, is what you said.
No, I just said I just said he was a good American.
There you go.
I didn't
say
that all Americans.
Matt said it. Fine. Not me. I didn't say it.
So speaking.
Listen, are you an American or an Americant?
Hey, we're recording now, aren't we?
Yeah.
You get over that, McClatchy.
When it comes to Putin, he's an Americant.
I guess so. Yeah. Now we know.
That's fine. Hey, you know what? I went up there. I gave it the old college try, and it's just that.
Well, it's more like the community college try, but whatever.
Really?
Well,
more like the GED try.
Yeah, kinda.
I'm sorry, cheese curds and gravy aren't exactly my deal. You know, we left that. We left that with you guys.
You guys take care of this. Is what you're saying, basically.
I'm saying
you can have hockey and Celine Dion too. Oh no, that's right. You kept Celine Dion.
Listen. Vegas kept Celine Dion. That's an international, practically an international territory.
Pretty much.
Crime and all depravity. So that's why she's still there.
Yeah. So speaking of Tom, we have a paracourse coming up with Tom on July 3rd, and IDPA match the next day on the 4th. Where are you going with my Doritos? Put down the Doritos.
Don't have your Doritos.
Have the Doritos.
On a related note, if Trevor would just mute his mic for a second. And
how could I? I was in the middle of reading that and had Naylor before she got out. Carbine Vitals 2.
No. I was going to say something about the Tommy course.
Oh, go ahead.
If you haven't called up Tommy yet and paid him, you should do that soon. And by others, I mean myself.
Well... There's one person couldn't make it, so there is one spot available for that. So if they go to paradisetraining.com, you can see the tab and then just click on that. So there is one.
So there is one spot left.
One spot left.
Wow.
I'm going to text, what's his name?
It's a foot race is what it is now. I'm going to text somebody too. Let's see who gets it first.
Oh, I can't remember who I have to text. What's his name?
I don't know.
Come on. Oh, yeah, you know who is. RJ's buddy.
Oh, Alex.
Alex.
Alex. Alex, you in, man? Come on, man.
I'm texting.
Hurry up. Right now. I'll do some more upcoming events then if you're going to text them. All right.
Yeah,
so multitasking on the fly yet again. Carbon Vitals 2 is that clinic is coming up September 4th and 5th, and there are currently 4 spots available to that. So Alex, you should also get on this train as well. So you will be sending your money directly to Thunderbird Tactical, just like you would be with Tommy. You're just going to pay them directly. I did take some money from some people, but that stuff is I'm no longer taking money for that. You need to pay Daniel directly now. So you can just go to Thunderbird Tactical, and you can just call him up or whatever you like. Get a hold of me if you need to, and I can help you out getting a hold of him. SummerSlam's coming up August 8th and 9th. Registration is open, and we got some spots left still, Trev?
19
spots, okay. There is an IPSC demo match May 20th at the Woodstock, New Brunswick range. So if you're in the area May 20th and want to see what IPSC is all about, go on out to the range and see some IPSC and maybe even participate. I'll have more details on that next week, I think. So ahead.
I was going to say, was IPSC New Brunswick advised, you know?
I don't know. All I know, I just got a message from somebody who is organizing it, and that's all I know so far.
Because we could promote it on the IPSC New Brunswick website and Facebook page.
That'd be cool, too.
Drop them a line and let them know.
Yep. All right.
Cool.
Do you want me to keep going, or you
Yeah, you're
now?
Doing fine.
Oh, sure. So the RNBRA Modified Target Rifle and Sport Hunter Shoot, also at the Woodstock, New Brunswick range. It's $15 for the MTR and $10 for the Sport Hunter category. That's May 30th. So if you want to come out and shoot your .22 at 50 yards, all official-like, you can come out and do that and maybe win a prize or something. One Shot Tactical Ontario IDPA Provincial Championship, a Tier 2, will be held August 15th, 9 a.m. Check out www.2015opc.com for more info there if you want to go play. Keep calm and make it rain.
Rolls off the tongue, that website. What's that website one more time?
2015opc.com. So 2015 OPC, Ontario Provincial Championships. That's what I assume it stands for. Keep calm and make it rain. That initiative is continuing on. You can go to tinyurl.com/kingsports and help out in that endeavor. And t-shirt orders, folks. We need some more t-shirt orders. We need to get this put together so we can get those ordered and sent off to those who need them. And so you want a t-shirt. That's not a question. You want a t-shirt, so order one. Call me up. email me, let me know, and I'll get you a t-shirt. So that's it. Trevor.
Excellent. All right, on to the news. RCMP Constable Stephen Hudson facing firearms charges. An RCMP officer in Fort Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan. Can you say that, Tom? Saskatchewan?
Saskatchewan?
I guess you can.
Nailed it.
has been charged with possession of a restricted weapon along with other firearms-related offenses. RCMP say they received a tip about Constable Stephen Hudson several weeks ago and then contacted the Alberta Sounds or the Alberta Serious Incident Response Team to investigate. Really? That's quite the title. The ASIRT or
ASIRT. ASIRT.
Oh, ASIRT.
ASIRT.
I think it's ASIRT.
It could be. Let's carry on.
Opened its investigation in Hudson on April 23rd, searching his home that same day. As a result of the search, Hudson was arrested and charged with unlawful possession of a Bushmaster 223 caliber assault rifle.
I doubt it.
No.
When it's in his car, it's a patrol carbine. But when he has it without a license at home, it's an assault rifle.
That's how it works, folks.
Oh, no, sorry. Which is a restricted weapon.
I have my restricted permit. That means I can get assault rifles now?
Only if you are a member of the RCMP and off duty and let your permit expire will they magically become select fire.
Interesting.
Unlawful possession of a .22 caliber rifle, careless storage of both rifles. I don't understand the term careless storage. It's either stored in accordance with the law or it's not. Either has a trigger lock on it or it doesn't.
Well, it didn't, so they were careless.
Over a doorway with the muzzle pointed. Anyway, possession of an unlicensed restricted firearm and ammunition, possession of a prohibited device, unlawful transfer and improper storage of his 9mm service pistol. Hudson has since been released with conditions. He has been
that he commits suicide in 10 days. Is that it?
I don't.
That was not the condition. No.
In Canada, it's not the conditions. No. He has been suspended from duty with pay until his trial. So unlawful transfer and improper storage of his 9mm service pistol.
Man, he really messed up there somehow.
Yeah. Well, he didn't take it home.
You want to borrow my gun for the weekend? That's what it sounds like to me.
No, it just means they're calling it transfer, but he should have transported it. I think it's unlawful transport and improper storage of his 9mm pistol. So I don't think he took it home. He should have taken it home in uniform in his holster and then locked it up. But maybe he just tossed it in the trunk of the car without a case or a lock, or maybe a case and no lock.
Well, it does say transfer and not transport. So.
Yeah, but it also says that a Bushmaster is an assault rifle. So can you believe anything they say?
Not a thing.
It's not a very good one if it was.
Yeah.
So anyway, a cop had a gun without a license and he got caught.
Yep. So they are not above the law, apparently.
Apparently.
Now we know. At least this time.
Mm-hmm. But I'm willing to bet that if an off-duty RCMP officer was traveling to the range in civilian clothing with his duty pistol in a holster under his shirt and got stopped and was questioned, he'd say, "I'm just going to practice." And they would say, "Okay, have a good day at the range, officer."
They might. Yep. Oh. So,
which, not only should they be allowed to do, we should be allowed to do. So I'm not going to be too judgmental of them doing it, but
it's just that if they get to do it, we get to do it too.
Yeah. And this goes to prove that gun laws do apply to the boys in blue as well.
Yeah.
So speaking of gun laws, we have Tommy here to discuss the Beretta 92 series of pistols.
Because that's a smooth segue. Speaking of gun laws, let's talk about a Beretta.
It's a segue. So it
is a segue, yes.
Yes, it is. That's
we're not
going to
say
need.
It's a good one. It is.
Let's get on with it.
Now, a high point is a handgun. You are correct.
So I'm at the Fredericton gun store, and there's a High Point in 45 under the glass. I'm like, oh God, can I please see that, please? So they open up the counter, and then they're looking for the keys for the trigger lock. And no, I got this, boys. And I take out my own set of keys, and I unlock the trigger lock on the gun. you travel around with trigger lock keys in your pocket?
Yes, I do.
I'm a gun owner. I'm in a gun store. This didn't seem unusual. Anyway, oh, man.
Beautiful, huh? You really want one.
Horrible. I'd like to...
I'd like to point out that is a striker-fired polymer-framed pistol, and I do believe you're collecting those.
And it's kind of one of a kind because it is direct blowback.
Uh-huh. You kind of have to have one of these, Trevor. The good news is they're not expensive.
Yeah, whatever. Going back to archery before I own a high power. So throughout my quest of pistol buying this winter, I bought several striker-fired polymer pistols, and I've been kind of jonesing for a double-action, single-action pistol. And obviously the CZ75 is the answer. It's the quintessential. It's the go-to, but it seems like too obvious an answer. And 10 Foglios, I could get one of those. I've had one before, but I was looking hard at SIGs and Berettas. And I thought, let's see, I've got two of my three childhood dream guns now. The third one, another Hollywood gun, would be the Beretta. And who knows more about Beretta than Tom
Me.
Nelson?
Oh, right. Tom.
Ernest Langdon would know more about me. I'll try to get him on for you guys.
Since we don't know who that is, you're going to have to do.
All right. Fair enough.
So this is not going to be a bait and switch. We're not going to do to you what we did to George Hill. unlike the 1911, I actually wouldn't mind having a Beretta 92. And I just want to know about the finer points, pick your brain, ask some questions, talk about the different models, how they've changed throughout the years. So maybe how about you start with a little bit of the backstory of when it came out and what it looked like when it first came out and how it evolved.
So it came out in the 70s. It was called the 92, just the straight up 92. And where it got involved with the Americans is that the SEALs kind of liked it because it was a high capacity 9mm pistol. And this was before the 226, because the 226 was just a 220, basically, in high capacity 220 and 9mm.
Tom, I'm gonna start way over for the listeners who may be new to guns and aren't familiar with the 92. What we're talking about is an Italian-made 9mm handgun, semi-automatic handgun with a double-action trigger. Yeah.
Just watch Lethal Weapon and whatever Mel Gibson is using. That's what we're talking about.
That's what we're talking about, yeah. So we are talking a handgun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a semi-automatic handgun, double action. The original 92s had a frame-mounted safety so they could be cocked and locked, but they also had those European magazine releases near the heel of the frame.
Really? And,
yeah. If you look up a 92SB, that's kind of what the original one started out as. When 1985, when the United States Army was getting rid of the 1911s, that's when we saw the F. The 92F, and it was pretty much the same thing except for it had an American style magazine release where it should be, and the F stands for we made it popular.
An American style magazine release. Ethnocentrism.
Would you stop me if I said North American style magazine release, Trevor? Would that be okay?
No, I would just say with a correctly located magazine style or magazine release.
Well, I think you could probably safely say the heel ones are European and the ones up on the frame by the trigger guard are American. I think that's a perfectly legitimate way of distinguishing between the two.
What about all the other guns in Europe that don't have it on the heel?
Stereotypes are there for a reason, Trevor.
You got to look at, like, if you sit there and you say the HKs aren't an American-style release because they're a lever release. So, like, even look at the PPQ when it came in there.
Are we still arguing about this, or should we talk about the 92?
Anyways, the 92. So, so it's 92F, and the F standard for a, you'd think it meant frame-mounted safety, but that actually means that the safety's up on the slide.
And so it should have been the S, but really, no, it's the F, because it's off the frame. So F means off the frame. So
it's off the frame. So pretty much.
It could have went with 92SS.
Frame safety? No.
The FS comes later. The S actually means something different on the 92F. Anyways, long story short, the SIG and the 92 were selected. Beretta made a cheaper proposal, and so the Americans went with the Beretta 92F. A few years into it, there were some metallurgy problems with the slides. And so what happened, the slides, like I think there's like 10 pistols total, where they were shooting them, and the slides came off the rear of the frame and went back into the shooter's faces.
That's not a feature?
No, it's... That's not a feature.
Huh.
It was
auto
just
disassembling.
Also
auto eye embedding.
Hey, you want to lose some weight? Let's start with your teeth. And so Beretta fixed the batch of metal that was wrong with it in the frames, but they also came up with the FS, and what the S stands for is that the slide cannot come off no matter how hard to the rear. You can actually cut off the front of the slide, and it will still cycle just fine, and it won't come off. And so basically all it is on the right-hand safety lever, because the 92 has, on the slide, it has an ambidextrous safety lever. There is a detent, on the left side, there's a little notch that goes down there, and there's an oversized safety pin that will prevent the gun from coming off to the rear. So that's the FS, and basically all the 92s since then have been FSs. You cannot find Model Fs anymore. They don't produce them. The only other model you can find, and they're kind of rare, are the Gs, which is the only difference between an FS and a G is that on an FS, the decocker, the safety will actually decock and make safe the gun. On a G model, it's a decocker only, kind of like a SIG. So it'll just decock, and then it'll spring right back up to the fire position.
Oh, okay. So it's just a decocker. It's not a safety switch at all.
No.
Interesting.
So, yeah, the 92s, the kind of unique thing about the 92 that sets it apart from a lot of guns is it doesn't use a modified Browning action. So if you look at your Glock or your SIGs, they have a locking lug on the top of the barrel where the slide meets.
Yep.
The Beretta has none of that. It actually doesn't have any locking lugs on the barrel whatsoever. It has a locking lug that slides into a slot on the barrel, and it's a tilting locking block system. So the barrel doesn't pitch up or down or yaw left and right in recoil. The Glocks, if you lock your slide back, you can kind of move the barrel around in a bunch of different directions. If you've got like a CZ or a Tangfo, especially like a coned barrel one, that barrel just moves everywhere. And so the Beretta's barrel only moves on the front and back axis. So you can only move it forward and back. You cannot move it left or right or up and down. So it's a very mechanically accurate gun. It doesn't have a lot of vertical stringing when you put it up in a rest. And it also feeds very reliably because the barrel doesn't pitch or yaw. So it's a very reliable gun, and it has no ejection port, because the entire front top of the slide has an exposed barrel, so it has all the room to clear the brass that it would ever need.
Yeah, it's very unique looking in that respect. The slide is not much of a slide, really. You've got a little piece of strap that goes over the front of the barrel to pin a front sight on, and then pretty much the same in the back for the safety and decocking system and rear sight. And that's
They were skeletonizing slides before it was cool. Yeah. So. it's a pretty cool system. I mean, the slide has a little bit to do with the lockup, but most of the lockup's done down in the frame, and so it locks down towards your hand, so it kind of gives you a soft recoil. And since the slide scalloped, it's a pretty soft shooting gun, really accurate soft shooting gun.
Also because it weighs 73 pounds. Isn't that not the correct number, 73?
It's pretty light. They're right around 34, 35 pounds.
Oh, that's not bad.
Pounds, ounces.
Oh.
Ounces, ounces, yeah. And so it's an aluminum alloy frame. So that's pretty light. So most of your weight's going to be up in the slide.
Just
so
like on a Glock or any other polymer striker fired, yeah.
But it's not as, offset as it would be on a Glock with the polymer frame.
So, Tom, I mean, they're known to be reliable. They're known to actually feel quite comfortable. A lot of people like the way the Beretta grip feels. And you just talked a lot about its accuracy. Are there any other things that attract you to this pistol in a sea of black polymer and strikers? Why are you still carrying and competing with the 92?
I've always kind of loved the 92. My first gun I bought in 2003 was a 92 Brigadier. So it was 92 FS Brigadier, and all Brigadier means is that they make the slide fatter to make the gun more robust for 40 caliber. But mine was in 9mm. I like them. I've always liked them. I like the way they look when they unlock and lock and when they're kicking out brass. They're not shot too much anymore. A lot of the guys in the military, their military models and trips in Afghanistan and Iraq have kind of given them a bad name on the internet. But once you understand the gun, it's unique. It's reliable as hell. I haven't had one malfunction out of it, and it's just accurate, and it just tracks well for me. So I like the double action guns. I think they're a little bit faster when you get good with them than a standard striker fired gun. You can get on the trigger earlier with them, and it just feels good. It just feels good, and there's a boatload of aftermarket parts for them, and the magazine, since it's a military pistol, are cheap. I can get high quality, great MechGuard magazines for $21 a pop, and those will have 18 rounds of capacity in them. So I feel great carrying the gun, and I feel great competing with the gun.
Something to be said for that. The aftermarket support is always important. Concealability?
Pretty good. The grip frame, as far as inside the waistband, the gun is kind of long.
That's a 5-inch gun, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a 4.9-inch barrel, but the way that it locks up, it's kind of long in the back behind the barrel because of the safety system. But it has, as far as that goes, it has the same sight radius as about a Glock 17, if you got a good set of sights on it. You get to, and the Glock, it's only a little bit longer than the Glock 19, so it good length on the slide, but the grip is actually smaller than the Glock 17. Like, if I hold a Glock 17, I probably have about a quarter of an inch of grip on the bottom. You know, the meat of my hand isn't sticking out the bottom of it. But if I grab the Beretta, I get a little bit of flesh hanging out that's hangs lower than the grip frame. So it's somewhere in between a Glock 19 and a Glock 17. So the grip really conceals pretty well if you're an average-sized male.
And my issue has always been with the grip. But I guess maybe it's not the grip. Maybe it's just the size and location of the mag release button, because I have a real hard time to get around and activate it, which is probably the number one reason why I don't own one yet. I don't find the ergonomics really work well for me with where the controls are located.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that the gun has its own type of manual of arms, but if you look back at like 1980s handgun sidearm weapons design, you know, everything was kind of brought over from earlier on, where the idea of ejecting a magazine quickly and letting it fall and hit the ground was kind of like a taboo thing to do. So I think everyone kind of made their magazine releases small and out of the way so nothing accidentally would happen with kicking them out. But Beretta and Wilson Combat have addressed that problem. Beretta has come out with an oversized magazine release, which is about three times the size. And okay. So it's super easy. I got extra large hands. I wear an extra large glove, and I don't have to shift my grip at all to get rid of the magazine with that magazine release. But Wilson Combat, since they're now doing Berettas, they have like three different options of magazine releases. So if that magazine release is kind of bugging you, for $40, it changes. And if you're lefty, the magazine release is reversible. So
Now, what about parts count and ease of, you know, working on the gun yourself, swapping out the parts, doing a detailed strip? When I got into the sport of IPSC, they were talking about how when they first started, a lot of them were shooting Beretta 92s back in the late 80s and early 90s, and they described that as the dark ages of IPSC, and they like to pick on the gun and the high parts count. And one guy even told me that the safety alone contains 16 individual parts to make up the safety of the gun. Is most of what I'm hearing just range bashing from guys that really don't know, or are they really that bad when it comes to parts count and detail stripping?
Well, the frame, well, you got to get used to, like, if the Glock was a level 1, and I'd say the SIG's probably like a level 2, the Beretta definitely is a level 3. The 92FS has kind of changed through the years, but you're looking right around 80 parts. And a lot of it has to do, there's some different springs in the frame. The frame's not too bad. The hardest part on the gun is the safety selector system. The safety decocker system. That has, I think, gosh, yeah, probably right around 12 parts. It's unique because the safety system, in order to get access to the firing pin, you have to remove the safety system. And it's probably one of the hardest things to do. You need roll pin punches. And there's a lot of plungers that are under spring tension that, if you're not careful, will pop right out. But if you do it in the 1 gallon Ziploc bag, you'll be fine. But it's kind of like...
Sorry, Tom, that is the horror story I heard. Somebody in my club broke a firing pin, and they had to ship the gun out of province to get the firing pin replaced.
Well, that's just being a baby about it, man. You just go watch a YouTube video and give it a good hour, and you'll have it down.
Yeah, that's me.
I've probably broken them down about 4 times in the slide. And once you do it a couple times, you got a pretty good knack for it, so you don't really worry about it. But the first one's a little bit of trial and error.
And I think that holds true for any of the guns. I mean, You know, even the Glock, the first time I had somebody had to show me how to take apart the Glock. Some guns after that, I just took them apart myself and reassembled them myself. But for the most part, they're all pretty complicated the first time until you know how to do them, and then that's it. You know,
yeah.
A week ago, I couldn't detail strip a grand, but now I can. So,
yeah, and the Berettas, it's basically, you know, the safety system is complex on the back of that gun just because of the Army's requirements. I mean, they went from a single action cocked and locked gun, which, you know, a lot of guys were setting those things off prematurely or accidentally. And so the Beretta safe is really safe on when the fire selector's up, when it's on fire. It's just as safe as a SIG. It's just as safe as a Glock. But when you put that safety lever down, it's not a safety lever. It's an off switch. The gun literally just turns completely off. There's like no way that gun can go off. So it's, once you look at it, it's an ingenious safety lever, but it does have some parts, but the lever is very durable. They are known to break firing pins now and then, but you'll break a firing pin and the gun will still go off until eventually, like after like 500 rounds, the tip of the firing pin from being shoved through the port at weird angles might break off, but it's like $10. And then in an hour, you got a new one back in and it'll last for a while. So now if you look at like the safety on like the 92s, so if you just have the gun on fire, you know, you have it decocked, double action, you got like a 12, 13 pound hammer pull, which can easily be fixed to like a 9 pound hammer pull with the, what's called a D spring from the 92D, which was a double action only. That'll take it down to about 9 pounds, but it's got a half cock, notch on the hammer. So if something happens, it can fall to half cock. So it has that long double action. It has a firing pin block with the firing pin block lever. But so it's pretty darn safe. But the other thing is, too, is when you put it on safe, there's a notch on the right side of the safety that puts the trigger bar, disconnects the trigger bar from the double action notch. So the trigger gets disconnected. There's a firing pin striker that rotates completely out of the way. So no pressure, no inertia can go to that firing pin. So even if I have the gun on safe and I pull the hammer back and I let it go and it falls with full force, it's not hitting anything that can push the firing pin. And even if it did, if that broke, it's still going to run into the firing pin block. So the gun is basically, once you have it on safe, nothing's going to happen. So if you're a shooter who's worried about manipulating the gun or unloading and showing clear and stuff like that, when you have the gun on safe, you can pretty much do anything you really want with the gun and not have to worry about an accidental discharge. It's not like in 1911 where I got to have it on fire to manipulate it, or the CZs or the SIG. You know, the SIG's on fire when you have to manipulate it. If you really want to have the gun on off, and just by off, I really mean off, and just clear the gun out, strip the gun out, you don't have to worry about it. And so that's one of the bright points about the 92.
Yeah, there's not a lot of guns out there that with the safety on, you can then unload them.
Yeah, you can, and you can tap safety on, you can unload it, you can detail strip the gun with the safety on. I mean, it was really, you kind of saw that the Army just kind of learned their lesson with the 1911 and just said, give us the safest thing you possibly can make. And that's what they got.
So a friend of mine just picked one up. He paid $750 for it Canadian, which in Canada is a smoking deal on a brand new 92FS. It was made in Italy, plain, black, parkerized, fixed front sight. And I mean fixed, you can't even replace it. It's like milled into the slide. Are there any other options out there? Can we liken it to a Glock Gen 1, Gen 2, Gen 3, Gen 4, and different features in the different generations? Or can I just buy a 92FS that has a replaceable sights and a 92FS? Like, is there different types of 92FSs or different generations? Because I know there are some options out there for sights. Like, this one came with fixed sights, and I would have passed on it because of that. But what are my options?
So you have a few models, and you have different names, which means different things. So like when I talked about earlier, like a Brigadier, which is a 3 ounce heavier slide with a removable front and rear sights, the standard 92FS, that's basically, it's very similar to the standard M9 that the United States military is issued with. And that is a pretty bare bones gun, no rail, no beveled magazine well, and not a non-removable front sight. The front sight is actually milled out of the slide. And so you're not going to get that thing off windage. But for the rest of the part, the gun is the same. as they moved on, they came out with a few models, which since have been discontinued. The Vertec, which is, I have a Vertec, and it's probably my favorite 92 model. Is it has a flat
Vertec?
Yeah, 92FS Vertec. The difference was is that this one has a flat mainspring housing like you'd see on a customized 1911. It has a beveled magazine well, removable front sight. So that kind of had a lot of the parts that I really wanted to have on it. A few other models that are currently in production is the Marine Corps' M9A1, and that has the front and back strap are more checkered. It has a beveled magazine well, but that one does not have a removable front sight. If you're a guy who's really looking to get into a Beretta 92, the best possible option I would think right now is the 92A1. So there's the M9A1, that's the Marines version. The 92A1 is a really kind of cool version. It doesn't have a beveled magazine well, but it does have
a friend of mine who works at a Cabela's sent me a text this morning, friend of the show, Ed. He sent me a screenshot of somebody who posted this on Canadian Gun Nuts. He says, I'm selling my Beretta 92A1. This pistol has about 150 rounds through her. It's in excellent shape. Will include factory box, case, paperwork, one mag. I've upgraded the skeleton to a skeleton hammer and a Hogue competition grip. I paid $1,024 to my door. The skeleton hammer and Hogue grip were extra. I'm selling it for $599.
Oh, I'd get it.
Yeah, I'd get it too if I hadn't just bought a Model 29.
Well, there's your problem. You got revolver fever. The 92A1, that's kind of where you go. That's the base model that Wilson Combat's making all their custom 92FS models afterwards. And it might, you know what, might have the beveled magwell. I'd have to double check on that. But it's got a lot of cool features on it. It has removable front and rear sights. It has the recoil buffer. So back in the day, they just fattened up the slides to give them more durability with the 40 caliber. But now they reinforce the slides with the recoil buffer in all of the models. And so it has an extended service life with it. And it also, what's the other deal with the 92? It has the new takedown lever. So you don't have to rotate the takedown lever back up. You just put the slide back on and it catches like a Glock. So it reassembles pretty easily. So the 92A1 is probably your best bet if you're looking at getting into another one until the M9A3 comes out, which has every single feature you wanted with the Beretta. It even has a threaded barrel and an extended magazine release from the factory. So that one will be coming out pretty soon.
And if I wanted the gun that Mel Gibson carried in Lethal Weapon, which one would that be?
That's a 92F. You don't want that gun.
Okay.
FS looks the same, but yeah, you can't change the sights. They're really good guns, but they are really basic guns. They're basic service guns. It's just like getting a high power. I mean, that's just kind of what you're getting with the gun. That's what it was meant to do. But there are more refined versions of the gun, and that's where you see the difference from guys talking trash about the Berettas. Is a lot of them are talking about the standard 92FS. But when you start getting to the M9A1s, the 92A1s, the M9A3s, Vertex, and especially guns like the Elite, that's a whole different story. Whereas Beretta fans, we're all praying that they come out with the Elite again, because that would be I would snatch that up in a heartbeat if I could get an Elite.
Nice. So how many of these do you have now?
I have three.
You have three.
So I have a Vertec, which is – I got a standard M9, and those in the States are $500. So that one doesn't see anything. I just have it to have it. I got a 90-2 TWO. That one was supposed to be the Gen 2 of the Beretta. It didn't sell well here in the States, but they still sell it in Europe, and that has a removable grip. And it has all the parts. It's basically a 92A1 with removable grip. So I shot with that one for a while before I picked up this Vertec. And this Vertec just feels a little bit better in the hands because it's a slimmer gun.
Matthew, anything else for Tom on the 92?
No, I'm good. Mel Gibson had one, and that's cool. But it's a neat gun. I'm glad we talked about it. Are we done now?
Thanks, Matt. Yeah.
Look, just because I don't like your gun doesn't mean I don't like you, Tommy.
Shut up and get off your own show.
See, I mean, the other way, I don't like you, but I like your gun. I do that a lot.
Right.
So, awesome. Well, thanks for that, Tom. You did answer some questions and clarify some things about the 92. For me, it's like my Model 29. You know, there was a few guns that as a child that I could identify because they were in movies that I liked and they were Hollywood guns. And, you know, I wasn't into guns as much. There was always guns around, but I wasn't part of gun culture like I am now and try and just learn as much as I can about them. But those were, you know, three guns that I always could identify growing up. Well, there were others, but I always wanted a 92. And I always wanted a Glock. The 92 I wanted because of Lethal Weapon. The Glock I wanted because of an ad I saw in a magazine once where they said the entire gun can be disassembled with one punch. And I just figured that had to be completely amazing because guns had to be way more complicated than that. And, well, you know.
Yeah, I got into them just because of Die Hard. Like, I watched Die Hard and I thought that was the coolest thing ever.
Here's the thing with the 92, I think. If this polymer frame striker fire pistol had never come out, if it had never been invented, never come along, I think the Beretta is probably one of the better duty pistols out there. And I think in terms of practical use, I think it's probably, you know, aside from, like I said, the polymer frame striker fire, I think it's probably the best duty style pistol there is. So, you know.
I might actually give the nod to the 75, the CZ-75.
Yeah, the CZ, I mean, that's a good one, too.
Much simpler.
Yeah.
It's similar to, like, the thing I don't like about the, like, shooting the polymer guns. You know, everyone shoots them, that's okay, but there is, you do get a degrade in accuracy using those guns. I like the CZs a lot, but the deal is with the CZs, it's, I kind of find it half between its own design and kind of like a high power. Like, I think it's, like, caught somewhere in between a real modern double-action pistol and kind of like holding back to the single action days. They're really accurate. On the reliability standpoint, I think the Beretta has it.
Just because it has such a huge port for the, you know, there is no port. When the shell comes out, there goes.
And I find the triggers on the Berettas from the factory are really good opposed to those from CZ. And like parts break on the CZs, the trigger springs and stuff like that.
Trigger springs, yeah, they're known for that.
And the deal is too is with the CZs, what kind of gets me, it keeps me shooting the 92 instead of a CZ is trying to get what you want on that CZ at a decent price it's not for me. I mean, magazines are cheap, but if I want to change out sights or try to get some sort of trigger job or whatever, I'm dumping a lot of money into that gun. As opposed to the Beretta, I just go to Beretta USA and Brownells, and they got a billion parts for it, and they're relatively inexpensive. I mean, I could, you know, spend $80 on this gun and get it exactly the way I want it with a skeletonized hammer, oversized magazine release steel guide rod, and
The flip side to that up here in Canada, Tom, is I can buy a tricked out CZ Shadow for IPSC for the same price as I can a duty Beretta.
Yeah,
and if I'm only going to compete, then the nod definitely goes to the Shadow, than it would to the Beretta.
Yeah, and it's all about where you're from and what you're doing. You know, here having it as the official, you know, sidearm of the United States Armed Forces, you know, for going on over 25 years, there's a lot to do with it. But the gun is accurate. Guys have won world championships with them in practical pistol shooting. So as recently as I think 2013. So
see, it just the fact that the Canadians carry a high power still is not enough for me to want a high power.
high power is a good gun, but yeah, I think when it comes down to double actions, it's definitely not the HK pistols for sure. It's if people want to say it's the SIG 226 is such a better gun than the Beretta, I have strong opinions about that. But the CZ is a good. I'd probably go, in my personal opinion, I'd go Beretta CZ. I mean, we're talking base CZ. We're not talking AccuShadow Tankfolio stock. But yeah, I think the Beretta has it beat. I mean, it's more accurate too than the Glock. Glock's a little bit faster to run, but the shooting's a lot better, and you can get such a better trigger when you're dealing with all metal parts that aren't kind of just basically slopped together.
And you're still getting reliability, because being part of that reliability in the polymer guns comes from the slot, but you're getting all steel parts fitting together nicely and still getting reliability in the Beretta. I want you to talk about for a second, and then we'll wrap this up, your opinion of reliability of all steel guns versus polymer guns, and how you think that, like, the Beretta, because it's all metal, or is it the fact that it's all metal, or is it the fact that it doesn't lock up like a Browning? What do you attribute the inherent accuracy to on those on the Berettas or the SIGs over the polymer guns?
So the CZ, it's basically the rails on the SIG. They're just well machined and they lock up really tight. On the Beretta, the barrel doesn't lock up with the slide, so that's not a factor. It's the actual system that it's using, the tilting locking block. And I think that's what helps. I mean, on the SIG, you have a lot of metal on metal bearing surface to really lock that barrel in. On the Beretta, the barrel can't move any other direction except for to and fro. So I think that's what helps with the accuracy. As far as the reliability standpoint, the Beretta being an 80p part, you know, service weapon with that huge ejection port and the ammunition feeding straight in and straight out has a lot to do with it. I've had a SIG 226. I competed with the SIG 226. And, you know, I see problems, and I've shot lots of matches with Glocks and M&Ps, and I still have malfunctions with them probably every other match. Could it be just me and my gun? Sure. But I think when people think about reliability, I think when they see reliability, they don't think about their own guns, but they think about a manufacturer's reputation of reliability. So I've had Glocks take a dump on me. I've ridden the slide stop up on the Glocks. I've had, you know, them not feed. The magazines, Glocks can be an issue sometimes. But I just find with the Beretta, it's just the feeding system just keeps it in there. It feeds and it's accurate. And that's all I really need it to be, reliable and accurate.
So in your hands, you feel you can shoot more accurately in tighter groups with a Beretta than you can a Glock or an M&P?
Yeah. Yeah, without a doubt, I feel like I can do that. Manipulating the guns, though, however, is a different story with the lighter polymer guns. They're easier to move around. They're harder to manage in recoil, but they're easier to move around, and they're easier to reload because those polymer magwells are just gigantic. On the steel guns...
You haven't shot a Steyr, have you?
What would Matthew say? They purposely made it to be... What would make a gun hard to reload, and let's make the frame that way?
That's what it seemed like they did.
But if you look at like Beretta or SIG magazines, how much smaller they are compared to like Glock magazines. And so that means that magwell's that small too. So that's the one thing about them. But it's sure a hell of a lot better than the SIG, in my opinion.
We're going to get the hate mail in. So that's tom@gundudes.com. You can send your hate mail about SIG.
Or Paracast.
Yeah, well, the SIG, I'll just give a few reasons. The SIG, basically no model you can get with a beveled magazine release. It has a much shorter sight radius. It has a higher bore axis. It has definitely more muzzle flip. The one thing I'll give the SIG is it does have a shorter...
The term is flipperosity.
Flipperosity.
Yeah, if you're going to use the terms, I mean, use them right.
Use the correct ones, yeah. High bore axis, flipperosity.
So I think it's the Beretta is just much easier to shoot. It just tracks better. So I think, you remember, the seals only went to the 92 because of that bad batch at the beginning. So I think but everyone else has been pretty damn happy with the Beretta 92.
There'll be a 226 in my black badge class at the Rescue Gun Club this year. So I'll make sure that I get my hands on it and abuse it a little bit to get my own opinion. So far, I mean, my P320 loved it, but it's not the same as their hammer fired guns. So,
yeah.
And that being said, I think they kind of missed the boat on that. They could have made the bore axis lower. There was no need to keep it that high. They just converted over a hammer fired 250, right?
So. Exactly. That's what the need was. The need was, what do we do with all this extra SIG P250 crap we got lying around? Oh, we'll make it a striker fire and sell it for $100 more. Deal. Right. Let's do it.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a great gun. It's accurate and has a fantastic trigger. But all right, well, thanks for that, Tom. I hope the listeners enjoyed that and learned a little bit about the 92. Are you going to hang out for the rest of the show, or do we have to cut you loose?
I have to go to a convention, so I got to get going.
All right,
then.
Well, before you go, Tom, let the listeners know where they can find find you on the interwebs and all the things that you're up to.
Gundudes.com. Listen to that show. Send us an email at radio@gundudes.com. I also do the Paracast. So if you go to paratraining.com, you can find the link for the Paracast or just search for it on iTunes. And then if you have any questions regarding training or any other stuff you want to know about, just send an email to tom@paratraining.com.
Tom, when you want to do a mental management episode, let me know.
Right on, man.
Take it easy. Thanks for coming out, Tom.
All right. Thanks, guys. Good to have you be with you.
All right. Well, thanks again to Tom. That was awesome. I know you enjoyed that, Matthew.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was thrilled. I only fell asleep once right at the beginning.
I literally
stayed sleeping all the way through it.
I literally thought we lost you there for a while. I thought you were going to contribute more. I thought you. I heard you say you liked the 92.
Well, I don't hate it, unlike some other guns that are out there. But I don't know. It is a neat platform for sure, and there's something to be said for 25 years of service in the U.S. military. Whether that something to be said is all politics, I don't know.
Hey,
but
dude, how long have we had the high power?
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing to be said for 25 years except for politics.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, it's got its champions. People do love that gun, and I don't hate it. I don't love it though. I think it's a cool gun, but I don't know. Not necessarily for me. I don't think.
I think. You know, like the way that I was hating on the 1911 and then turned around and bought a 44 Magnum. I was talking low capacity and expensive ammunition. And
yeah.
Brian Oliver says, okay, so you're complaining about the price of ammunition and low capacity and you bought a what now? Right. I didn't buy that 44 so I could shoot every day. And that's kind of, believe it or not, how I look at the 92. I don't want the 92 because I'm looking to replace my Glock.
Right.
I want the 92 because I'm looking to shoot in production in IPSC. I'm looking at the 92 as a gun for my collection, that I always admired since I was a child. So, yeah, that's why I want it. I mean, but Tommy pointed out it's more than that. It's not a washed up has been. It wasn't. It didn't go from champ to chump. In the right hands, it can still be a champ. So,
yep.
Yeah. All right. Normally we would ask Owen if he was here, if we had a Warriors Ethos, raw milk, gardening, aviation tips for us, but we couldn't make the show tonight. So
we're going to talk about dandelion greens and how they can improve your salads.
No, well, maybe we'll talk about dandelion wine and how it can improve your relations with your neighbor after you drink a bottle, but no.
Huh.
So Owen's not here, so shout out to Owen. He could make it tonight. And that'll take us into listener feedback, and I'll grab the first one, both parts of it.
There you go.
So from Gary, Gary says, congrats, Trevor, on your acquisition. It sounds, from Gary again, pardon my Parkinson's, just happy for you. Sounds like you picked up a beauty. I hope it exceeds all your expectations. So Gary was typing from a smartphone, and it outsmarted him. Thank you, Gary. It certainly does exceed all of my expectations. As I said earlier, the fit and finish is what I had hoped it would be. And actually, Matthew, there's one of these in the firearms museum that I go to and we've been to. And and I had checked it out. And after I had checked it out the second time I was there, that's what kind of lit the fire under me to order myself one. And that's how, unfortunately, I got that classic one, right?
Right, yeah.
So I returned the classic one. And before this one, the vintage one, arrived, I was back at the Firearms Museum, and I went straight to that case, and I asked if I could see it, and I was fortunate enough, he did take it out, and he let me handle it, and it confirmed, again, what I had suspected about my 29-10, that it was not the same gun.
Right.
And I dry-fired that revolver at the Machine Gun Museum, and I was really impressed, and that trigger was way better than the trigger on my 29-10. 29-10 is the new reproduction version of this classic revolver, and it's actually better than the one I received. My trigger is good and also better than the 29-10, but the 29-2 at the museum is better than this one. So, but yeah.
Well, one from in the museum may have been fired a million times too, and you know, cleaned it right up and polished everything, just from use. So
that's
you just may have to shoot yours a bunch more.
Yes, because this gun hasn't been shot much. Yeah. And you're right, the one at the museum has been shot quite a bit. It actually is part of Derek's collection. He just keeps it there.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
So, yeah. So he did say that he shot it a lot.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I am very happy, and it did exceed my expectations. So thanks, thanks for that, Gary. Will you grab this one from Justin?
From Justin, I know you must be receiving several emails about your trend to wander off topic. I personally enjoy that part of the show. It is second only to when Matt says, I should cut that, and then it stays in the show. Keep up the great work.
So funny, because earlier on the show when we were scrolling off, I was thinking, that email later on, is that in support of this behavior or against it? Oh, this is stressing me out. You know what? It's funny because I listen to a fair amount of podcasts, and when people go off topic or somebody is interrupting or like I really want to hear about the topic, I really want to hear what they have to say, and they're squirreling off, it annoys me. I'm like, oh, would you just shut up and move on already? And then I turn around.
And then we do it.
Yeah, then we do it. So.
Well, it's so easy to do. I mean, we're not, you know, following any sort of script here. It's just wherever we happen to go is where we end up. But at least yeah. We do try to eventually cover the topic.
Something like that. So, what are we doing?
I think shout-outs and goodbye? No, not yet?
No, first Rob would like to...
more email. Okay.
More email. This one's from Rob. He says, hello, Slamfire crew. I'm on a period of leave right now. It's probably maternity.
Probably maternity, yes. It's probably another female listener, Rob.
Rob, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm on a period of leave right now, and with the weather being what it is here, I thought I'd do some 22 shooting.
Yeah, go Rob.
As you can see from the pictures, it didn't start out well, but after I drifted my front sight over a bit, my Mark II is ready for small game or general planking fun. I'm normally not a fan of camo guns, but it's starting to grow on me. Take care. Keep the great keep the episodes coming. You three make it great. That's right. Tommy does help make the
He really did. Great. He really helped finish out the,
P.S. Matthew, feel free to correct my grammatical or punctuation errors you find in this email. School wasn't my strong suit. That's why I chose the Army. Haha, just kidding. Thanks, Rob. Mullen, how do you pronounce that again? Come and take it.
Yeah. Come and take it. There you go. Yeah. Mullen Labe, I think, is
Mullen
how you say
Labe.
It.
Mullen Labe, yeah. Come and take it. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I didn't see any punctuation or grammatical errors there, Rob. So.
And I didn't see any pictures.
Well, I archived them already because it's been like a week since they've been in there, and I figured everybody's seen them by now, but yeah. I guess not.
Good thinking, but no, I didn't. Yeah. So, no, Rob, you wrote it well, and I read it typical.
It was fine.
So, all right. You've got the next one.
Yeah, from Sharp 97. Still in the middle of the episode, but don't want to forget. Owen, I think it's different for your friend. I think border guards need to have their pal or our pal, while cops don't need any such license whatsoever. Okay.
Here's the thing. The border guards and the Brinks drivers, they are required to have their license, their restricted license, before they can get their ATT, etc. Police officers don't need an our pal to carry their sidearm while on duty, but they do need their firearms license if they want a personal firearm to go to and from the range. Just ask that guy from Saskatchewan.
Yep. Yeah, the difference here is the Brinks guards and the border guards, they're not recognized, as I understand this, they're not recognized as law enforcement. It's correct. It's law enforcement that has the pass on the licensing. So
yeah, I think the same as the situation that pertains to the police also pertains to prison guards. They, for example, we've got an instructor in training right now for the Black Badge out of the Miramichi area who is a prison guard and an instructor for the prison, and he sent me a Facebook message today saying, I'm training the guys on the C8 and a 9mm H&K. Do you want the brass?
So, nice.
Oh, yeah, I know those. Of course, I said no. So the guys that are working there at the prisons, I don't think need their firearms licenses. It's part of their job, and they're federal employees. So
right.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, he continues on with this email. He says, so I started this email during 104, I think. Alas, I forgot to send it. So, Trevor, I hear you're not so happy with the amount of squirrels you guys have been seeing on the show, so this is for you. What would you suggest to someone who has an interest in doing some archery? How should they start? What should they be looking for in terms of gear, media, and activities? Thanks for answering all my questions. Sharp 97. P.S. What's up with the NFA? I also joined a couple months ago, but I haven't seen any magazines. Are they still giving those out with memberships?
All right, so we'll start with the NFA question. If you haven't received your magazine.
He has a PPS, too, I'm just saying.
Does. Oh,
yeah, and it says, what do you guys think of this? He sends a link, and he says, let me know if the link doesn't work. It doesn't work.
Okay. Yeah, I did try that. It didn't work. I thought it was just on my phone that didn't like it.
No, it doesn't work anywhere.
So the link didn't work, Sharp.
Now you know.
NFA, you should still be getting a magazine. I've officially relinquished my duties and responsibilities. I got a Facebook message from the board member for the Maritimes asking me if I was going to the AGM because the office had tried to email me, apparently, to ask if I was going. I received no such email. Confirmed my email address. They did have it right, but I didn't receive an email. So anyway, no, not going. And then I got another message from him asking if I had officially given up my position. So I said yes. But that being said, the magazine should still, as far as I know, I don't think that's changed. The Canadian Firearms Journal should still be coming. Only one. We used to get two magazines. Now there's just one. And call Ginger at the office, and she'll track down your magazine and tell you if it's been shipped or if they're just backlogged. And what else is going on? Well, status quo. There's still five directors taking the NFA to court to try and force the president to step down. The AGM is until end of the month.
Yeah, end of May, I think.
24th.
Yep.
Yeah, so 24th, 25th, something like that. So, all right, as far as your archery questions, we actually have two emails this week asking about archery. I'm going to keep it brief, but I will suggest that you go listen to the New Shooter podcast. I was on there with George to talk about all these very topics related to how a new person gets into archery. And that was episode 30-ish, I think. 30 or 31. I'm not sure. 29. Somewhere between the late 20s and the early 30s. In those episode ranges, I'm in there answering all these very questions. But real quickly, how do you start? You start by going to an archery club before you go to an archery store. Talk to a coach. And you have to figure out what type of archery you want to get into. Is it going to be competition target shooting or competition 3D shooting? Is it going to be hunting? And do you want to shoot a traditional bow, a compound bow, or an Olympic style bow? Determine what genre of archery you want to do. And that will help focus your research and your questions for a coach. And don't walk straight into an archery shop because their goal is to sell you something. So let's carry this into the next one from Justin. Justin says, as much as I enjoy it when you guys give Trevor a hard time about archery, I've been wondering about it. What sort of things does one need to know about archery before buying the equipment? So that is very important with regards to compound archery. You need to know that compound bows are not one size fits all. They're either specific in draw length, set to a draw length of 27 inches. That's how far you pull the string back in relation to the person, the archer's draw length. So you have a draw length and the bow has a draw length, and those two numbers need to be the same. Longbow versus compound bow versus crossbow. A longbow is a stick and a string, and there's no technology involved. It's all technique and form and matching the arrow to the bow. A compound bow is the Ferrari of archery equipment, composite materials, and when you draw the bow back in a compound bow, the force of the bow is compounded by the shape of the cam that works with the limbs. That's where the energy comes from. So you draw the bow back, that's the action part of the bow, and when you release the string, all of that energy is transferred from the string into the shaft of the arrow and sends the arrow downrange. And compound bows are a lot of technology. They have to be tuned. They have to be adjusted. It sounds complicated. It's not really. It's a couple of basic things. But if you don't know what those basic things are, sure, it sounds complicated. And just they not only are they adjustable in draw length, they're adjustable in draw weight. So the force it takes to draw the string back could be anywhere from 40 pounds to pull it back to 80 pounds to pull it back. So you have to know what you're getting into and get something that fits you and get something that's adjustable. A crossbow, crossbow is a compound bow or a recurve bow, basically laid horizontally onto essentially a rifle stock. You draw it with a set of draw ropes. Sometimes there's a crank on the stock of the crossbow. If it's 150 to 180 pound pull, you can actually sometimes draw them, cock them with your bare hands, and they're really, really easy to shoot. If you can shoot an air rifle, you can shoot a crossbow. So if you want to hunt and don't have a lot of time to practice and don't want to be concerned about making the equipment fit you, but you want to hunt with archery tackle, a string and an arrow, get a crossbow. Because if you can shoot a rifle or a BB gun, you can shoot a crossbow. So you're still hunting with archery tackle, but you don't have to worry about making it fit. He carries on or continues on. He says, what sort of value do you get with accessories like an arrow rest and a trigger? You get what you pay for with both, actually, in this case. A lower cost or lower priced arrow rest will be more difficult to adjust. When you're buying precision, you're buying adjustability in both of those devices, an arrow rest and you call it a trigger. We call it a mechanical release aid. It hooks onto the string and it's held in your hand or attached to a wrist strap that goes around your wrist. And you get what you pay for with both of those, no question. What you're buying is adjustability and precision. What is the legality of target shooting on one's own land? That varies from province to province. In New Brunswick, the rules for discharging a firearm, it's 100 meters with a bow. So you can discharge within that 100 meters on your property, but you have to be 100 meters away from everything else. That's specific to New Brunswick. So you'll have to check your own local municipal, and sometimes there could be municipal bylaws that come into effect here as well. How high end should one go for first wanting to learn how to shoot and non-competitive target shooting? Even with the bows, I mean, there are some bows out there that they're really cheap and they're on the low end, which makes it difficult to learn how to shoot correctly. So you pretty much buy the best bow and the best training that you can afford. Finally, potentially, the silliest question, can you build your own bow like how you guys talk about building ARs? Sort of, but that's really high-end stuff. Like I've had limbs and cams off of previous years. So I may be running a 2007 riser with limbs off of 2006 and cams off of 2010. But let me tell you, you need to know what you're doing and you need to consult tune charts to make sure you get your ropes, your strings and cables correct. I don't advise it. We're talking really high-end stuff because the deflection of the limb is specific to the size and shape of the cam. And you decide to start cobbling parts together in a bow press, take it out of the bow press and you draw it back and it's just overpressured and the thing blows up on you. So it can be done, but only by really experienced people that really know what they're doing when they start switching out limbs. I've gone from shorter limbs to longer limbs, but I've always done it under very close consultation of professional archers and some help from manufacturers on occasion. So if you want to build a bow, build a long bow. It's much easier. So I hope that answered your questions, Justin, and be sure to check out that episode of New Shooter Canada for more details. Matthew, could you wake up now, please?
Oh, hey, you're done. Yeah. Done with the archery, done with the Berettas. We're back. We're back?
I've really tried to keep it as short as I could. I know you're – now you know how I feel when you guys talk about milk.
I did. All right.
I'm kidding.
Right. Milk. So where do I begin with milk?
No, that's – you don't.
That's Owen's department anyway.
I know, but he's not here, so...
Somebody else has to talk about milk.
No, somebody else has to get picked on.
Oh, that might as well be me.
Right. How about you take this one from Thomas?
Hey, guys. I listen to your show every week and love it. But one thing you need to improve upon is your nonsensical ramblings about nothing. This isn't the show Seinfeld, the show about nothing. LOL. Please work in that.
Please work in that or work on that, Thomas?
It says in. I'm just saying.
Say
yep.
Well, thanks for that, Thomas.
Thanks.
We'll work in that.
Yeah, we'll definitely work in that.
We'll work in the nonsensical ramblings.
Right. So I was watching Seinfeld the other day.
Were you?
Yeah. You know, he's got just about every kind of cereal brand in his cupboard.
I completely forgot to give a shout out to Fred. When I was at Filthy's?
Yeah.
This Fred guy. Maybe I shouldn't talk about this. I don't know. Anyway, I got this empty shell from a tank for my ammo collection.
What kind of tank?
like a leopard.
Oh, a leopard tank.
Yeah.
That's cool. So it's big then.
Oh, it's really big.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's the biggest thing in my collection.
I guess so.
Sorry, Red. Red had sent me a shell, but now I have this one.
Yeah. So Red had sent you the biggest one, but now no longer.
Right.
Now it's Fred. Apparently. So it went from Red to Fred.
Right. And there's a guy outside of Fred Durickton.
Right.
Who will, on a lathe, turn down a wooden projectile to match what should go onto this shell.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then make it look kind of... So I'm going to have to track that guy down.
So it went from Red to Fred. So if your name is Ned, you should really send Trevor like a huge, like 155 howitzer or something or other.
Right. Yep.
That's. I mean, basically, it's got to rhyme and it's got to be bigger. It's a rule.
And well, now my buddies are playing the one-upper game. Like, it started off with listener Andy. Andy was giving me these huge Whitby rounds and stuff that was bigger than a 338 Lapua. And then, right. Oh, yeah, well, I can now do that. And anyway, so keep it up, guys. Before too long, I'll have a nuclear warhead in the backyard.
And that'll be cool.
Yeah.
Nuclear, so Lisa. It's pronounced nuclear.
Sorry, Thomas. It's not like we do it on purpose.
Or this time we may have. I'm not sure.
There may have been some spite in this one. That's true. But for the most part, yeah, we don't do it on purpose. And
these things do happen just the way they happen.
And you know what, Thomas? It annoys me, too. It really does. I just said about that earlier, how on other people's shows when they, get to the point already. I tuned in to listen to you talk about whatever, not you guys carry on like morons because you can't stay on topic. No, it is annoying, and I, for one, will try and work on it.
I will also let Trevor work on this.
Perfect. That's the best we can hope for. All right. Is it me now from Russ?
Yes, from Russ.
Dear Slam Fire, ha! Okay.
Dear Slam Radio Fire, he actually wrote.
Oh, he did too. Dear Slam Radio Fire, ha! Okay. That would have been a lot better. So you'll cut that and let me do it again, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Perfect. Dear Slam Radio Fire. Ha. I don't get it.
Listener, I don't get it either.
Listener from the great socialist utopia on Terrible here. I wanted to say thanks for making...
Oh, I get it. We're all dyslexic.
Oh.
So if we had read that properly or improperly or the way we normally would have read it, it would have been fine, which is why we didn't understand, because it made sense.
And since I'm legitimately dyslexic, the first time I read it, I got it right. See? That's awesome.
So that is hilarious in your own little way there, Russ. Thank you for making fun of us.
Yeah, this is a dyslexic's nightmare. That's perfect. Thanks. So he's from Ontario, or Banterio, as we like to call it. And he wanted to say, thanks for making such a great podcast. I enjoy listening and wait every week for the next one to be available. I have two questions. First, I recently bought my first shotgun, a Dominion Arms Grizzly 12-inch version with Ghost Ring sights.
Cool.
What kind of exercises or drills could you recommend to become a better shotgun operator? I plan on getting a tactical stock and some other goodies for it as well. Second, if we were, I like the second question. Let's do the first one. This Dominion is pump action, correct?
Yes, it is.
Right. So I would recommend that you, if you can take a class, take a class. If you can't take a class, at the very least, get your hands on the Dynamic Art of the Shotgun Manual video.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. That's a good video. You learn a lot about shotguns in there.
And there are some great drills on there on reloads and how to change between one type of shot to a different one. So going from a slug to buckshot or vice versa, how to clear malfunctions. So that's what you want to do with your shotgun. You want to get really proficient on reloading and changing the type of shot in your gun and clearing malfunctions if you have some.
Yeah, you really want to get good at loading because this is the 12-inch, so I think you can only put 3 in the tube, maybe 4.
So if you're not killing, you're filling.
You need to be, like Trevor says. Yeah, you got to be really quick at putting bullets in there. Yes, yeah. I said bullets.
So it's a devastating round, but there's not a lot of them. So
that's it, yeah.
You really got to be able to keep that gun fed. So that's what I would recommend. Practice, if you want to be a shotgun operator, practice loading your shotgun as much as you can.
Yep.
And it's all about efficiency of movement. Try not to waste any movement. Try and be as efficient in all your movements as possible.
It's like you just watched that video recently.
No, it's been a couple of months.
Well, you remembered that park. That's one thing he continues to harp on about.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's in all of his videos. So
yeah, which is it is a good thing. I mean, I shouldn't say he's harping on about it. He's continuing to speak about it. It's a good thing to be.
It applies fluid to all platforms.
Everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No wasted moments.
No.
So, because wasted moments is wasted time.
That's it.
Second, if we were able to carry a sidearm while hunting, would a 1911 be a good backup gun if I were partridge hunting with a wooden stocked SKS? Keep up the great work. I'm Ron Burgundy.
No, you're not. No, it isn't. No.
First of all, yeah, you're not. You're not Ron Burgundy.
No.
Second of all,
you're not partridge hunting. No 1911s. Nah. Basically, no. Basically, we're not reading your email anymore. We're done with you.
At least he said wood stock on an SKS, because you know what?
It sort of belongs on the SKS. He should, if he wanted to get your goat, he should have said wood stock on an AR.
Yeah, or plastic on an SKS. You know what? Send me all the hate mail you want. I don't know what your problem is, you SKS users. You buy a cheap semi-automatic military surplus gun, and you try and turn it into something that was never designed to be in the first place. Every time I see you guys with your SKSs and your ATI stocks and your plastic bayonets and crap on them and your drum mags pinned to 5, I want to butt stroke you with an AR-15. It's disgusting. I don't know if you're broke or you're cheap or maybe, God help me, you actually like the platform, but I'm sick of it. All you SKS users are going to put you all on an island and leave you there. And it's not even because it's the only gun you can afford. You actually think, like, you revel in this thing. Like, I hate them. I hate them, and it's just... Why are you trying to upgrade your SKS? It's an SKS. You can't polish a turd, still turd. All right, stop it. Enough with the SKS modifications.
Oh, boy. And the hate mail is trevor.gmail.com.
Send me your SKS hate mail. Send it. I'll just delete it like I'd like to delete the SKS. No, it's a cheap gun. It's a cheap gun. You get some guy on YouTube or on Facebook a couple of months ago on all the NFA pages was trying to get us to give him money so he could buy a Magpul PRS stock to add to his little he made a buffer tube adapter for an SKS so that he could put a PRS stock, specifically a PRS stock, on his SKS. I asked him for some numbers. Says, what's the overall length going to be with the stock on the gun? I don't know. I've never put one on the gun before. Hold on a second, Charlie. You want me to donate money to you to buy a PRS stock so you can put it on an SKS of all things, and you've not even tested this product with the PRS stock yet, but you want money so that we can buy your stock so you can do the testing and evaluation so then you can sell your little molded plastic part? No, no, no. It doesn't work like that. You're not going to get your R&D money from me, especially for an SKS. You want to put a stock on a rifle that costs more than a rifle, and you want me to pay for the stock?
Tell us how you really feel about the SKS, Trevor.
Well, the man's an idiot. So there's that.
You don't go over the edge at all when you go. Like when you it's just like your pinky toe kind of slips over. It's not like you fall headlong off the cliff when you go over the edge and like drag everybody with you. That doesn't happen.
When you want to put rims and tires on your Chevette that costs more than your Chevette, yeah, I get a little annoyed by that. It's the same thing, man. The French guys back in high school, they used to put pinstripes on their Chevettes and put stereos in their cars that cost more than the car. No, man. Anyway.
In other words, or in other news, do whatever you want because it's your money. So
as long as you're not spending more on your stock than your rifle.
No, you're allowed to do that. Yeah, no, you're allowed.
Yeah, no, you're right. Free country, you're allowed to be an idiot. All right, what else we got?
I think you're going to apologize, and then we're going to wrap up the show.
All right, I apologize to everyone except for the SKS owners.
You kill me.
I mean, you know what? If you get an SKS and you admire it for what it is, I'm all for that. I am, really. It's when you try and turn an SKS into something it's not. Yeah, that's all.
Okay.
So if you want to send us some more SKS email, do so by sending it to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Any iTunes reviews, Matthew?
I checked just now, and no.
All right. So if you would like to leave us an iTunes review, you could do so by going to iTunes, looking up our show, clicking rate and review, leave us a rating, and write us a review. We're greedy. We like 5 stars. Mm-hmm. We don't need to know. Send the criticisms to the show
Yeah.
And 5-star ratings to iTunes.
That's right. We don't want to hear what we did wrong on iTunes. We want to hear about that here.
Yeah. Tell us what you liked on iTunes. Tell us what you didn't like here. That's what we need. Yeah.
So, yeah.
What else we got? Shout-outs and goodbyes?
Yeah. No, I don't have any.
Okay. Well, let's do a shout-out to Derek for making 510 Whisper keychains for all three of us.
Yes, that was very nice of him. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
And again, and thanks for taking me into the museum again. And to Justice and your dad. Now, remember, Justice, your father has to wait in the parking lot. I couldn't get him in. So we're giving Justice a tour.
Well, after Mark sent that jib-jab, I don't think he's allowed anywhere near us anymore.
Yep. Actually, there is a 30-meter restraining order in the process right now.
That's a rule.
Yep. 30 meters. You can't come within 30 meters of any of the slam fire hosts. So.
I do have a couple shout-outs.
Okay.
To Nathan, Brian, Isaac, and Justin. Those are the people that I was helping sight in their pellet gun. So just wanted to say hi to those guys because I know they listen. So, hey, guys, buy some more pellets. I'll come over and we'll shoot that thing some more.
All right. I got another shout-out, and that goes to Morley. Remember Morley?
I do. Dave and Morley.
No. The Dave and Morley is the problem why I thought this Morley was a chick.
Right.
This Morley is a male Morley, and huge shout to Morley. He hooked me up with some 44 Magnum brass at the Calgary Gun Show a couple of weeks back, and turns out he has a really cool YouTube channel called Due East Adventures. He's out of Nova Scotia, and he's into all kinds of things. He's got some awesome videos on there on making shelters. He's a little bit into archery a little bit, so I'm hoping to talk to him about some archery stuff. That'd be cool. And camping in the wintertime. Just go over and check out his channel. It's all kinds of stuff. It's survival stuff. It's hunting stuff. It's Due East Adventures. And it's my new favorite channel.
Cool.
Yeah. So be sure to check that out. And don't let the name fool you. He's very manly, actually.
Right.
He's doing a comparison video on the SIG 226 and the Norinco clone. Quite detailed. He's taking them apart and comparing, comparing contrast kind of thing. So,
right. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. So,
to check that out.
Yeah. All right. Be sure to check out all the great shows over on the Crusader Podcast Network. That's crusaderpodcast.com. There's a lot of Canadian and American shows there. Join any and all of our National Firearms Associations. Ah. I'm squirreling off.
All right.
Canadian Shooting Federation.
Canadian Shooting Federation? Never heard of it.
Heard of these guys?
No.
They sent a package to my club, which I immediately ripped out of the secretary's hands when I saw a document call on long-term athlete development. So this is a new philosophy in Canada. It comes right from Sport Canada. And all of the national sport organizations, Hockey Canada, Golf Canada, Swimming Canada, they all need to develop this new philosophy on long-term athlete development, and it's to ensure that people don't specialize too early in one particular sport and get burnt out. It's to develop athletes that are active for life, from 5 to 95, right? And so it's the first shooting discipline I've seen roll out this document, and I'm very familiar with it from all of my coaching programs and whatnot. So that's why I initially grabbed it, but then I got the insurance information. So, not that I'm bitter at the NFA, but I am. And so, I'm going to be trying to get my club to drop the NFA and sign up with these guys. And I found another club here in the Maritimes that do get their insurance from the Canadian Shooting Federation because it's better coverage and it's cheaper.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, you sign up a little bit differently. There's a particular fee that you sign up, and then it's so much per member. Like the NFA, it's a flat rate, $14.95. So call it $15. $15 for every person in your club. With this rate, with this group, I think it's $400 for the executive, and then it's $10 per member. So don't quote me on those numbers exactly. I have to look them up. But anyway, the Shooting Federation of Canada is definitely worth looking into. I don't know how active they are politically, but they are very active with regards to coaching development and developing competitive shooting. So whether it's Olympic level, Trapper Skeet or Biathlon. That seems to be their thing based on their website and the stuff that I've looked at and developing coaching. So, I mean, that really appeals to me. And the insurance is better, so it looks like I'm going to talk my club into dumping the NFA. So stay tuned for developments in that little drama.
Awesome. All right, yeah. Then.
So what else are we doing? Okay. check us out on Gun Owners of Canada. Like us on Facebook and take somebody shooting.
And I'm Ron Burgundy.
Good enough. Have a good night, everybody.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something.
When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.